dunya. This is the pleasure of this world. Wallahu andahu husnul mu'ab. And in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has the best reserved for mankind. If we take these things and break them into pieces, this is pretty much what we in this life try to seek and try to fulfill ourselves and our needs from. When it comes to women, for example. And women here, it just represents the human sexual desire, be it males or females. When it comes to gold and silver, it's basically talks about wealth. When it comes to horses, it basically talks about means of transportation. When he talks about al-an'am, in terms of the food and in terms of meats and what have you. And when he talks about al-harth, and he talks about farming, which means fruits and vegetables and what have you. So food, wealth, transport, and sexuality. These are the things that the human being constantly try to fulfill himself from. So males and females, this is the first shahwa that we have is the shahwa, the sexual desire. Now, even when it comes to psychologists, they keep fighting whether which desire is stronger in the human being. Is it the desire for food, the desire for sex, the desire for power, which one it is. So some people say it is this one, some people say it is that one. From a Quranic perspective, since Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put it in the first list, so it could be, I'm not saying it is, it could be the strongest desire that the human have is towards his sexuality rather than towards his wealth and other things. Because you see that sometimes people give up all these things for the sexual desires. Let us take a break and we will come back right after.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So the ayah, the verse in the Quran, Ali Imran, verse 14, Allah talks about us and wanting and having and needing passions and desires. So we said passion and desire is required because without this requirement, I will not move towards it, which means I would either not eat and I will die, either not try to seek wealth and I will die, either I will decide not to get married and the human race itself will die. So Allah put this shahwa, this desire, in the human being. Now, the Imam alayhi salam in the Sahih al-Sajjadiyya in verse 8, in supplication number 8, he says, O Allah, I seek refuge in you from ilhah, insisting of these desires and these pleasures. No, he's not saying, I don't want them. Keep me away from them. Because if he did that, then obviously that makes the Imam an angel and not a human being. Because what makes a human human is his desires and his passions and his wants and needs. So the Imam says, Oh Allah, I want to have my passions and my desires under control. I don't want them to control me. I want to control them. Because from the word ilhah, we understand that the desires are the one that keeps pushing me, not me who's pushing them. So you see that most of the times we let our desires take control of us. We feel there's an urgency inside us. There's like a voice inside me that keeps telling me, go do this, go do that, go do this, go do that. And then I end up committing haram, for example, or I overindulge myself and it turns into a haram. But rather the imam says, oh Allah, this insisting, please help me with. I need to be in control of them. So I control myself when it comes to my sexual desires. When and where and with whom under what conditions. I have to determine that. When it comes to food, it's exactly the same thing. When it comes to wealth, it should be the same. I am in control of them. So even the hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says most of the things that get people into hellfire is in fact their stomachs and their private parts. Why? Because they don't have a sense of control. They are enslaved by their own passions and desires. We will leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Yemen's Ministry of Human Rights has held a press conference on the dire situation of Yemeni children amid the years-long Saudi war on the country. The ministry has criticized the United Nations for its inaction on Saudi atrocities.
When the United Nations removed Saudi Arabia from the list of violators of children's rights, it encouraged the kingdom to continue killing Yemeni children and targeting service facilities for children such as schools, hospitals and health centers. It also prevented the entry of humanitarian and medical aid for children. We know that there are UN reports that talk about the spread of malnutrition amongst children, along with many chronic diseases that need care. But unfortunately, there is no real action to save the children of Yemen.
Officials say the UN has collaborated with the Saudi-led coalition in killing Yemeni children by providing political cover-up for Riyadh's violations. Moreover, the world body removed the kingdom from the list of groups accused of violating children's rights.
The United Nations is a clear and prominent partner in the aggressive war on Yemen, and we have in the 8 years of war clear evidence that the United Nations participated in all the crimes committed against the Yemenis and did not condemn Saudi Arabia for its crimes, but rather the victims bear everything the executioner does. The United Nations has contributed to the killing of Yemeni children through its silence and coverage of Saudi crimes. It has also removed Saudi Arabia 5 times from the list of violators of children's rights.
According to human rights groups, more than 9,000 children have been killed or maimed by Saudi airstrikes since the beginning of the war in 2015. Health officials say more than 1 million children are suffering from malnutrition, one of the highest numbers in the world.
Human rights activists say the United Nations is hostage to Saudi Arabia's funding for its programs. They say the world body has contributed to the killing of Yemeni children because of its silence on Saudi crimes. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
Israeli forces have assassinated Ibrahim al-Nablusi, a resistance fighter and commander of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Israeli troops raided Nablus early Tuesday and surrounded a building in the old city where al-Nablusi had barricaded himself in. A gunfight lasted for several hours with Israeli forces even firing anti-tank missiles at the building. 32-year-old Islam Sabouh and 16-year-old teen Hussein Jamal Taha were also killed in the raid. At least 60 Palestinians were wounded, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry.
We have not witnessed such an aggressive raid to Nablus in years. The aim was to assassinate al-Nablusi and any other Palestinian who was assisting him. He refused to surrender and clashed with the soldiers for hours and was finally martyred.
As the raid started, we rushed to the old town, but the soldiers had blocked the neighborhood. They opened fire at us. We tried to evacuate the wounded, including a woman, but they continued shooting at us. Dozens were wounded as a result.
Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid has reacted to Nablus operation, saying that the killing of whom he described as terrorist Ibrahim Nablusi was another step in Israel's uncompromising fight against terrorism.
This cell has been worrying Israeli military. They carried out a number of shooting against Israeli soldiers and settlers. That is why the Israeli military wanted to strike them and kill one of its leaders.
A number of West Bank cities, including Ramallah and Al-Khalil, observed commercial strikes as part of a period of mourning and in protest at the killings in Nablus. The regime forces clashed with the protesters in Al-Khalil and shot dead at least one Palestinian.
It has become clear that Israel is targeting any Palestinian who is honored as a real fighter. The regime might succeed in assassinating those fighters like Ibrahim al-Nablusi, but they would even be remembered as heroes and icons who devoted their lives to fighting Israeli soldiers. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
We never cease to support our Palestinian brothers and sisters. Why are the world rights entities keeping mum while Israel continues to kill innocent people in Gaza?
Tensions have escalated between Israel and Palestinian resistance groups since Friday, when Israel carried out airstrikes on cities across the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, killing dozens of people, including two commanders of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. The Islamic Jihad's military wing, the Al-Quds Brigades, responded by firing hundreds of rockets towards Israel, putting the Israeli forces on the back foot. Activists here say the Islamic Jihad's show of force has pushed Tel Aviv into calling for a ceasefire, which took effect on Sunday.
In the past, the Israeli attacks on Palestinians would go unanswered. But today, as soon as Israel carries out a strike, the resistance responds immediately with its rockets. So, the era of hit and run is over.
The conflict is the worst outbreak of violence between Israel and Palestinian resistance groups since Operation Sword Al-Quds, an 11-day war last May. The UN Security Council has expressed deep concern over the situation in the Gaza Strip during an emergency meeting held on Tuesday to discuss the Israeli aggression on the besieged territory.
While the UN has expressed its concern over the escalating violence against Palestinians, activists here say this is not enough. They called on the international body to stop paying lip service and take action to keep Israel from further violation of security in the occupied Palestinian territories. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Yemenis from all walks of life flocked to the street of Yemen's capital Sana'a to commemorate the third Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Hussein. He was martyred on Ashura, the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram.
We went out as Yemenis to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, who inspired patience and steadfastness in us in the face of the forces of global arrogance. We are in a battle with thousands of people like Yazid and even worse than him, including America and Israel. They attacked the Yemenis people and the Palestinian people. They are still killing our women and children. So this memory gives us hope that the values we learned from Imam Hussein will make us live generously and win at the end of the battle.
Imam Hussein, protesters said, is still alive because of his immortalized values and beliefs, which reject the oppression and corruption that Yemenis are currently experiencing. They further said Imam Hussein was the symbol of revolution and tenacity, who motivated Yemenis to resist the Saudi-led attack on their country.
This day is very important to us as we consider Ashura part of our identity. We are with Imam Hussein with our souls. Ashura this year coincides with the battle with the Zionist enemy. So the nation will follow the path of Imam Hussein in his jihad until the liberation of all occupied lands, especially occupied Al-Quds. And Yemen has come a long way towards freedom and independence.
After refusing to pledge alliance to the tyrant of the day, Yazid, in 680 AD, Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions and family members were killed during the Battle of Karbala.
People here believe that Yemen has become a modern-day Karbala, with the Saudi-led coalition killing people, displacing civilians and enforcing a siege on the country. People here are confident that Yemen's fight against the enemy will ultimately lead to victory. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana'a.
Like every other Muslim nation in the world, Afghans marked the 10-day mourning ceremonies for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Tasua, which falls on the 9th of Muharram and is devoted to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abul Fazl al-Abbas, drew hundreds of mourners to one of Kabul's old shrines. Attendees listened to clerics' speeches regarding the Battle of Karbala and beat on their chests.
This year, we are marking Muharram rituals under the rule of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. However, our processions are more crowded, passionate, and prosperous than previous ones. You know that Muharram is not only related to Shias, so we have our Sunni brothers taking part in ceremonies and services shoulder to shoulder with Shias.
We Afghan girls share the grief of Karbala tragedies with Zainab, Imam Ali's daughter. We are all sorrowful on this day and remember the suffering and bravery of our role model, Hazrat Zainab. Today, we live under the flag and our hijab shows that we are her firm followers.
On Ashura, Afghan Muslims shut their businesses and take a day off to pay tribute to Karbala martyrs. They say prayers and hold charity events. This year, despite security threats, they took part in mass mourning ceremonies alongside Taliban officials.
Today is the martyrdom anniversary of great and respected Islamic figure and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. I offer my condolences to you and all Muslims. Undoubtedly, Imam Hussein sacrificed his life to save Islam. We, the people of Afghanistan, followed Imam Hussein's path through fighting against invasion, arrogance, and oppression. May Allah keep the love of Imam Hussein alive in the hearts of all of us.
Ashura is significantly important in Islamic calendar. Ashura and Imam Hussein's school of thought teach us freedom, bravery, resistance, and Islamic unity. This righteous path will last until doomsday. We Muslims globally are obliged to announce and spread the message of Ashura to all Muslim and non-Muslim people, especially youths.
The commemoration comes as Shia Afghans have been repeatedly targeted in places of worship and schools by terrorist groups, only because of their ethnicity and beliefs. On the 7th and 8th of Muharram this year, two bomb explosions killed and injured more than 30 Shia mourners. Afghanistan has witnessed different social and political changes over the course of centuries. Against the odds, Shia Muslims have been steadfast in remembering the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's martyrdom. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Hundreds of mourners marched through various streets wearing black and reciting elegies in honor of Imam Hussein, who, along with dozens of his household members and loyal companions, were martyred in Karbala in present-day Iraq.
The martyrs here said this is a time for sorrow and self-reflection when one commits himself completely to the mourning. They said the mourning and the reflection of the tragic events at Karbala are intended to connect to the suffering and martyrdom of Imam Hussein.
This very day, March 10th of Muharram, is the day of sadness, is the day of agony, is the day of shedding tears to all Muslims. The reason is that in the field of Karbala, Imam Hussein was being mercilessly killed by Umayyad leaders.
The mourners also engaged in chest beating as the procession moved around the town in the hot tropical sun. The mourners said Ashura not only signifies intense grief for Imam Hussein, but is also a motivation for resistance against injustice in the world.
Imam Husseini has submitted his life entirely in order to save Islam. And that is what Malik Ibrahim Zakzaki Hafizahullah is calling for, that the entire Muslim and even non-Muslim, even Christian, let us gather together to fight oppressors, let humanity and then justice be in our nation.
Many of the mourners said they will continue the struggle to resist injustice because, as the well-known phrase goes, every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala. Danjum Abdullahi, Suleja.
Throngs of Londoners marching through the center of the British capital to commemorate Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, brutally murdered in the Battle of Karbala 1,400 years ago. Similar processions in the rest of the UK and the world to mourn him and his 72 companions killed along with him, among them members of his family. Their crime, standing up to the tyrant of the time, the Caliph Yazid.
It was a tragic incident that happened many years ago, but the moral stand that Imam Hussein took has transcended time and space. Its reverberations felt through generations, and this is proof of it.
Many generations later, men, women, and children flagellate themselves to identify with the suffering of the Prophet's grandson, a man of morals who strived for social justice.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam represents all of the martyrs in all the world throughout human history and planetary geography.
For me, he represents justice, bravery, and sacrifice.
His story is an example to mankind. As he stood against oppression and injustices.
And it's not just the mourning that unites the people here. For them, the march is an annual chance to share the legacy of Imam Hussein beyond the borders of their countries of origin. Saeed Purza, London.
Mourners in Karachi commemorated the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein's youngest child, who was not spared by the enemy forces.
The 6-month-old Ali Asghar, the youngest son of Imam Hussein, was martyred by the forces of Yazid. The Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's sacrifices for righteousness and freedom are still a source of inspiration for Muslims around the world.
Mothers who brought their babies along paid tribute to Ali Asghar on the first Friday of the Islamic month of Muharram and mourned the 6-month-old son of Imam Hussein.
What had the 6-month-old done? We are out on the streets recalling the message of that innocent child of Imam Hussein, that we will always stand against the tyrant of the time. We will always stand shoulder to shoulder with the oppressed, no matter what.
Special eulogies and rituals were performed to commemorate the incident where Ali Asghar was killed with an arrow shot in his throat in the plains of the Iraqi city of Karbala.
We are commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of Ali Asghar, the youngest martyr of Karbala, who teaches us the lessons of readiness and sacrifice in the face of injustice and brutality.
Ali Asghar was martyred while he was in the arms of his father, Imam Hussein, who was pleading for water to quench the thirst of his little baby. The grandson of Prophet Muhammad and his companions sacrificed their lives but refused to pledge allegiance to the unjust Umayyad Caliph Yazid. Muhammad Turi, Karachi.
Prayers, storytelling, and tearful rhythmic chanting are all expected when Shia Muslims begin their annual Muharram commemorations across the globe. Shia Muslims mourn the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, remembrance of the martyrdom of the Prophet Muhammad's grandson Imam Hussein, who was unjustly slain by an oppressive tyrant some 1,400 years ago.
It isn't only in the East that you witness the mass commemoration of Imam Hussein's legacy, but also a growing community in the West, particularly of Shia Muslim converts, are benefiting tremendously from the story of Imam Hussein.
We spoke to one convert who explained to us why he felt Shia Islam was the ideal faith for him.
That's what I did like about the falling of the Atla Bay, because I could see in the condition of black people in the past, we suffered quite a lot in the past. And when you look at the teachings of the Atla Bay, it's there too, that they see people suffering and they didn't like it in their time. And similarly, when we reflect on Hussein and our lives today, we've got to think Hussein didn't like that we mistreated and not respected as a human being. So it's important that we emulate what he stood for.
Despite the growth, some community leaders feel more work is needed to be done to support new converts. Shia Muslims currently make up about 15% of the estimated 3 million Muslims in Britain, with well over 100 mosques across the nation. Ensuring Imam Hussein's memory is being shared like never before. Robert Carter, London.
On Tuesday, thousands of Lebanese marked Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of Prophet Muhammad's grandson and the third Shia Imam, Imam Hussein. One of the most pivotal speeches of Hezbollah Secretary General is usually given on this day. This year was no exception. Addressing hundreds of mourners in Beirut, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah outlined main stances of the resistance movement.
Today, on the Day of the Oppressed, our message to our enemy is that they need to know who they are facing and that in Lebanon there is a resistance that has proven that it can defeat the army, which was said to be invincible, and it is ready to go to new heights.
Sayyid Nasrallah warned that Hezbollah will not sit idly by if Israel carries out its threats to assassinate leaders of the Palestinian resistance groups in Lebanon.
We tell the enemy, do not miscalculate your moves against Lebanon, or the people of Lebanon, or the resistance in Lebanon, not on the issue of petrol or gas, or maritime demarcation, and do not make the mistake of launching any assault. In the last few days, we heard that they are plotting to assassinate figures from Islamic Jihad or Hamas or other Palestinian factions in Lebanon. On Ashura, I tell them that any assault against any person in Lebanon will not go unpunished.
The Hezbollah leaders stressed that the movement will take action based on the response that Beirut will get from Israel on the issue of maritime resources. Nasrallah said Hezbollah will by no means compromise on Lebanon's rights. Muslims across Lebanon hold mourning processions for 10 days in Muharram to remember the horrific crimes which were committed against the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein, and his family and companions in the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq in 680 AD. This historic tragedy remains very much alive in the hearts and minds of the mourners to this day.
Imam Hussein was killed more than 1,000 years ago, but he is still alive in our hearts today. And he is our leader in this fight against Israel and Americans' aggressions.
The injustice happening around the world, the oppression that's going on, everything has been linked to what Imam Hussein suffered with his family 1,400 years ago, because the message that has conveyed in Karbala is conveying nowadays, because as we know, every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala, and that's what we say in Arabic.
The Lebanese mourners also hoisted Palestinian flags along with black and red banners of mourning to show that the day of Ashura is the day where the oppressed fight back.
The Ashura commemoration for Hezbollah and its supporters goes beyond the obvious religious rituals. It has defined their stance in the face of U.S.-Israeli policies, not only as a military resistance, but also as a deeply rooted political and social movement. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the US, a federal judge on Monday, 1st of August, sentenced Guy Wesley Refit, the first defendant to go on trial in the Justice Department's sprawling criminal inquiry into the January 6th attack, to more than 7 years in prison, the longest sentence to date in a case stemming from the Capitol riot. The article you're about to hear has been written by New York Times journalist Zach Montague. The piece is titled, First Capitol Rioter to Face Trial Gets 7 Years, Longest Sentence So Far. In the United States, a federal judge on Monday, 1st of August, sentenced Guy Wesley Refit, the first defendant to go on trial in the Justice Department's sprawling criminal inquiry into the January 6th attack, to more than 7 years in prison, the longest sentence to date in a case stemming from the Capitol riot. After a 6-hour hearing, Judge Dabney Friedrich handed down a sentence at the low end of the guideline range. She noted that was still significantly longer than any given so far to any of the more than 800 people arrested in connection with the riot, many of whom have struck plea bargains. Prosecutors had asked that Mr. Refit be given 15 years after adding a sentencing enhancement used in cases of domestic terrorism. But Judge Friedrich rejected those terms, sentencing him to 7 years and 3 months in prison with 3 years of probation and ordering him to pay $2,000 in restitution and receive mental health treatment. A jury found Guy Wesley Refit guilty on 5 felony charges in March, including obstructing Congress's certification of the 2020 presidential election, carrying a .40 caliber pistol during the riot, and 2 counts of civil disorder. Unlike others who breached the building, Mr. Refit did not go inside the Capitol building. The sentencing capped a trial that was seen as an important test for the Justice Department, which is only beginning the marathon process of trying what could be scores of rioters. In particular, prosecutors and defense lawyers had been watching to see how the obstruction charge, a rarely used count central to many of the cases yet to reach trial, would hold up in court. But Judge Dabney Friedrich described Mr. Refit's case as unusual on account of threats of violence he made against his own children when he discovered he might be swept up in the federal investigation following the riot. In March, Mr. Refit's son, Jackson Refit, took the stand to testify that his father had become radicalized in the months leading up to the January 6th attack and had threatened both him and his sister in an attempt to dissuade them from speaking to authorities, telling them that traitors get shot. Before Monday, the longest sentence in a case related to the attack on the Capitol was just over 5 years, given last year to a man who had pleaded guilty to assaulting a police officer with a fire extinguisher. But because Mr. Refit did not plead guilty like hundreds of others arrested in connection with the attack and went to trial, Judge Dabney Friedrich said the sentencing guidelines for his case were 2 years more than if he had reached a plea deal. The sentence comes as a parallel investigation being carried out by the House January 6 Committee has been gaining momentum. As courts slowly process the hundreds of cases related to the riot, speculation has grown as to how the Justice Department will respond to the committee's findings about former President Donald J. Trump and those in his inner circle who helped instigate it, and whether the committee will formally recommend criminal charges. After briefly appearing hesitant to address the court on Monday, 1st of August, Mr. Refit, dressed in an orange jumpsuit with his hair pulled back into a thin ponytail, offered an apology for his actions. I did want to definitely make an apology, he said. In 2020, I was a little crazy. Everything went a little stupid. But Judge Dabney Friedrich said that although she appreciated his sentiment, she doubted his sincerity, given that while in jail awaiting sentencing, he apparently had raised funds off his incarceration, releasing politically charged statements, doubling down on his claims, and a manifesto he had dictated to his family by phone. Mr. Refit conceded that he had often resorted to hyperbole, but said that any inflammatory claims he had made were intended to draw donations to support his family financially. In the months before and after the 2020 presidential election, Mr. Refit got involved with the Texas Three Percenters, a loosely organized militia group, and sent messages recruiting others in the group to accompany him to Washington on 6th of January 2021. As part of his sentence, Judge Friedrich instructed him not to contact any members of the Three Percenters or other militia groups while on probation. In final remarks, Judge Dabney Friedrich made a point to stress that while Mr. Refit's actions were not as violent as many others who had attacked police officers on 6th of January 2021, they nonetheless put hundreds of people in danger. While Mr. Refit repeatedly described himself and other rioters who stormed the Capitol as patriots in statements from jail, Judge Friedrich called their behavior the antithesis of patriotism. Not only are they not patriots, they're a direct threat to our democracy and will be prosecuted as such, the judge said.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrowshahi.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahruddin was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Kamerayi that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite scholars, dignitaries, and ulama. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, one from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi, and another from the University of Qom, a faculty member of University of Qom, Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhruhani. Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Dr. Fakhruhani, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum.
So in this new series of the program, The Teacher, in the month of the Muharram and Safar, we try to talk about and discuss the life and works of those outstanding ulama who produce at least one outstanding work about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. That's why for today's discussion we want to talk about a scholar maybe very much unknown to some of our dear listeners, Sheikh Fazl Ali Ghazvini, the author of Al-Imam al-Hussein wa Ashabuhu. Okay, Sheikh Mahdavi, let's start with you, brother. Give us a little bit background about this outstanding man, Sheikh Fazl Ali Ghazvini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum ya Aba Abdullah. Our condolences on the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein and his companion. As you said, Fazl Ali Ghazvini, the author of this book, he is born in 1290 in one of the villages of Ghazvin, the city which is located in almost in center of Iran. He had a long journey before he reaches to Najaf, whereby he benefited from the outstanding scholars, namely Akhund Khorasani and Mirza Habibullah Rashti. So before he reaches 15 years old, his father sends him to another city. Actually, from the village, he sends him to Qazvin to stay with the Hawza al-Salihiyya and learn the Hawza lessons. And yes, from there, he moves to Tehran for a short period of time. He stays in Tehran, continues his scholarly life, and from there, he moves to Isfahan in order to benefit from the philosophy and Irfan next to the outstanding great scholars who were living in Isfahan.
That's right.
And after he finishes this package of lessons in Isfahan, he moves to Najaf, where he can benefit from the presence of the great Ustaz, who is Akhund Khorasani. And after some years, he can gain and obtain the permission of Ijtihad and locate himself and place himself in the circle of Istifta of Akhund Khorasani. When we imagine the position of Akhund Khorasani in terms of fiqh usul, so it gives us the picture of the great position of Ayatollah Ghazvini in terms of the noble understanding on fiqh usul. So this is very important dimension of his life that must be looked upon.
Yes.
It is not only to be the author of one book, historical or maqtal book. No, he has reached the level of ijtihad, and he has been given this opportunity to be placed in the circle of the istifta, whereby they could receive different questions that they wouldn't find the response in the official book of the marja. So this circle of ijtihad would sit together, discuss together to come up with the response for the actually people who had asked those.
So it's usually a consultation group, isn't it? Shaped around the character of an outstanding marja, especially the students, and sometimes, for example, through argumentation or reasoning or deductions, an answer to a specific fiqhi or historical question must be given, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, that's all right. Really beautiful, and shows how rich the teaching courses of Akhund Khorasani and his students were. Let's get back to Fazl Ali Mahdavi Ghazvini, Dr. Fakhruhani. Most of the time, you know, the authors who have been the students of Akhund Khorasani are famous for fiqh or usul al-fiqh or something like that. But this time, this author, and he is known with a historical book on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, that is Ashab al-Hussein, or we can say al-Imam al-Hussein wa Ashabahu. What is this book exactly? What is the content? And what was the main motivation of the author to compose such a book?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Sallallahu alayka wa Abdullah. Assalamu alayka wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It must be indicated that the Shir religious seminaries, Hawza, where we find them, whether in Iraq, in southern Lebanon, in Iran, in the Indian subcontinent or elsewhere, there are places academic spaces where such scholars are trained irrespective of the chief denomination or chief academic in the voice of the top-ranking marja taqlid.
Okay.
Granted that Akhund Khorasani was very much famous because of his in the voice and his achievements in fiqh, in principles of fiqh or jurisprudence. However, we find that in his circle, there were certainly many giants of knowledge in various branches of Islamic scholarship, including Islamic history. And the late Fazeli Ghazvini was one such figure who benefited from the jurisprudential formulas or yardsticks and applied them in the realm of Shia Islamic history.
Including the story of Karbala and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and mainly being concerned with the ashab of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, in the story of Karbala. What does it show? Why the dedication to the Ashab of Imam al-Hussein? Because when you look at the content of the book, for example, the Maqtal of the Imam, the name of the, we can say, the women who were present at Karbala scene, the men who were companions of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and all this. What is the significance?
Yes, the significance, manifold. First of all, there are at least two trends. One is, historical trend, or, for example, a kind of storytelling or literary trend, in which the author might regard himself, rightful enough to add some details, as commonly called, zabane hal.
Yes.
Some psychological or imaginative states or wordings, and ascribe them to any of the figures that was present on the plain of Karbala, in contrast to some people who were really very delicate, people of very high standards and yardsticks, and they were trained in the field of usul fiqh. Those people who were trained in the school of usul fiqh, they were not such people to be deceived very easily, and they rarely accepted whatever told by someone else. In this regard, I should like to say that I do have a copy of this book, and the edition that I have was, it was printed in four volumes in the year 2015 by Imam Hussein's Holy Shrine.
Okay.
And the last volume, available, the main text is available in three volumes, plus the last one, which is, which consists of various indexes, prepared based on the main body of the book.
That's all right. Okay.
Here we find that, let me add this one. Okay. Here we added that, Fazl Ali Ghazvini's approach, even regarding Imam al-Hussein's companions, is quite critical. He doesn't accept anything totally or blindly, rather any indication given over there, receives a very detailed analysis, either from the point of Arabic linguistic and literary scholarship or from historical perspective.
And this is a look that we expect from the student of Akhund Khorasani, especially in the historical facts. Okay, Sheikh Mahdavi, let's get to the main content of this book. Al-Imam al-Hussein wa Ashabuhu. What is the main content of this book, and how did you find it?
Okay, before we talk about the main topics that Sheikh Ghazvini has dealt with in this book, I think this is also very important to know that he was assigned by Akhund Khorasani to go back and stay in your hometown, Ghazvin, and start teaching, doing tabligh, and being with the people. Otherwise, he would stay with Akhund Khorasani in Najaf, and we wouldn't expect such a book from him. So I think it was a very important point to know that how they would take into consideration the role of tabligh and being among the people. It was a kind of sacrifice. If we are familiar with the atmosphere of the ulama, it is a kind of sacrifice to go and stay with the people and do the tabligh. So we can consider this as one of the fruits for his sacrifice. And then regarding the topics,
This is good to know that the book has been divided into 9 chapters, mm-hmm. starting from the all speeches or khutab, khutbah.
Okay. Yes.
All khutab or speeches that Imam has delivered, and the book's messages, I mean the risalat, yes. or those communication that would have been taken place in terms of written form,
yes.
between the Imam and the people, including from the Kufa or different people, even Muhammad ibn Hanafiyya.
Okay.
And then we have the short sayings of the Imam mm-hmm. in the 3rd chapter. In the 4th chapter, we have the wasaya. The wasaya means the last words of Imam to his families, companions, and the rest.
Yes, okay.
And then in the 5th chapter, we can talk about the way that Imam left mm-hmm. Mecca. And then he moved to Iraq. Actually, he had started the journey
yes.
to Iraq. And then it reaches the chapter 6, in which he talks about the incidents and mm-hmm. events took place by the night of Ashura.
Okay, which are really important. Okay.
Yes, okay. And what took place on the day of Ashura will be classified in the chapter 7.
Okay.
And this is very important to know. It is not a kind of short information. The whole book, as my dear teacher just mentioned, that he has got 4 volumes of
yes,
book.
Yes, yes.
So the whole book in the version that I have, it includes 500 pages. So it's a very huge book.
Yes.
It's not a kind of just referring to the things briefly. No,
that's
when
right.
he talks about something, he tries to comprehensively cover all things which mm-hmm. has even single
yes.
or short relationship to the Ashura.
Yes, that's right.
So in chapter 8, he talks about this is regarding the yes. Maqtal.
Yes, yes.
Yes, the way that all companions got martyred and
yes.
also Imam Hussein alayhi salam
okay.
got martyred. And the last one, which is very important, that he also has emphasized about the extraordinary events which took place after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam,
right.
based on Shia and Sunni
references
sources.
And
yes,
sources.
This is very important because
right.
we have heard that sun has been darkened, or
yep.
the cry of the heavens,
yes, yes.
angels,
yes, yes.
things like this.
Okay.
And he brings up the analogy of Prophet Yahya,
uh-huh.
Prophet John,
yes.
When that type of martyrdom took place, that we know that
yes,
they
yes.
beheaded
yes,
him,
yes. Yes,
the
yes.
infidels.
Yes, yes.
So he says the same, that we have the ahadith
uh-huh.
regarding the
okay.
Prophet Yahya after his martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
It is not far from our mind to mm-hmm. believe in the ahadith that we have regarding the son of the
okay.
Prophet. Yeah.
So with comparative analysis, he brings us some other examples of these extraordinary events that took place after the martyrdom, or, for example, demise of great men of the history of religion.
Or better to say, first of all, he brings up the riwayat
uh-huh.
from
okay.
both
okay.
sources, Shia
yes.
sources and Sunni
yes.
sources. And
yes.
then, in order for our listeners to
yes.
comprehend it,
yes.
he says, okay, the same that we had
okay.
such a riwayat and reports regarding the way or the incidents which took place
yes.
after the martyrdom
okay.
of Yahya, the
yes,
prophet.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So this is not very far
okay.
from our
that's
mind
right.
to believe in whatsoever we have regarding Imam Hussein, the son of the last
okay.
prophet, which is Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Dr. Farh Rouhani, how did you find this part of the book, especially? I mean, about the extraordinary events that took place on the day of Ashura, especially after the martyrdom.
Yes, in this regard, it must be indicated, as the late Ayatollah Sheikh Fazl Ali Ghazvini never cited anything
mm-hmm.
except with making detailed and precise references to authentic and reliable sources.
Yes.
It must be indicated that those incidents certainly took place.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay.
Otherwise, such a critical-minded scholar like Ayatollah Sheikh Fazl Ali Ghazvini
yes.
wouldn't have mentioned them.
Yes.
As in the earlier part of my contribution, I indicated there are at least, 2 branches of those people who usually recount the events of Karbala, those who rely on other people's recountings,
mm-hmm.
and those people who approach everything,
yes.
not only critically,
okay.
but in such a way that they might seem to be finding any counter evidence.
That's
so
right.
That at the end they might accept something.
And regarding the Ashab of Imam al-Hussein,
in
this book, you find it absolutely authentic, isn't it?
Yes, really. Okay. And it must be indicated that, for example, there may be some interpolations in the case of some of the companions of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam. In this case, we find that Fazali Ghazvini presented a detailed list together with the specifications and the comments and the reactions of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam.
And the lineage of these people, I mean, generation after generation, were really honored to be among the martyrs of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. I mean, the great ancestor was among the martyrs, so they were honored among the Arabs, isn't it?
Yes.
In the Shia world, okay.
There are many Arab dynasties even right now in, I mean, in, in the Middle Eastern region who take pride that their ancestor was one of the companions of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
And this shows the
significance. Everything is carefully confirmed.
Okay. This is like, for example, how could I say, the royal family of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, isn't
it?
I mean, the noble blood that is among the Ashab of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, generation after generation, and they are proud of it. That's all right. So when you go to Imam al-Hussein's holy shrine and the chamber, there is a big, big plate on the side of Imam al-Hussein, on which the name of the Ashab who were martyred, the most important ones, are mentioned over there, okay?
Yes, certainly.
That's all right. These are really neglected, I mean, scholarly speaking.
Yes.
But they are really interesting fields of study to how to take a scientific look at the story of Ashura, his the companions of Imam al-Hussein. What
There's
is the story behind?
Yes. You mentioned that, I mean, they've been overlooked. You're right. It has been so. But why? The reason is very important.
Okay.
The reason is that the magnet of the personality of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam has been so powerful and attractive that whoever enters this field of research is attracted to Imam al-Hussein al-Salam. And the minute he understands, he finds out he finds out that, he's been working on this field for at least 25 years. Okay.
That's all right.
Much time has gone only focusing on one person.
One person.
Yes.
That's all right. Sheikh Fazali Ghazvini, the author of Al-Imam al-Hussein wa Ashabuhu, passed away in the year 1367 according to the Hijra calendar. He was buried in the city of Qom in Sheikhan Cemetery, which is the burial place of so many outstanding scholars and ulema of the Shiite world. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man, be under the auspicious shadow and grace of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam today and always, inshallah. And thank you much, Sheikh Mahdavi.
You're most welcome.
And Dr. Fakh Rouhani, may this program is accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.